Boom, we're on. And today's guest, we've got the strongest brothers on the planet. Tom and Luke, how are you, brother?
Yeah, good man, yourself. Good
yeah. Thanks for having us
good
on.
Good to see you.
Appreciate it.
Yes. He's a fly in the last couple of years. Obviously, Scotland's strongest men. And now, second in the world's. The first brothers ever to be top 10, am I correct?
That's right, yeah. That was our claim to fame.
2019.
Phenomenal achievement. Appreciate two boys from the Highlands just doing their thing. And it shows that from a small village that anything can be achievable, especially for up-and-coming power lifters or whatever yous are doing it.
Definitely.
Still young, Tom.
Yeah.
One of us. The baby of the sports.
Yeah. Though, so. No, phenomenal achievement. It's an absolute honour to be sitting across from these guys.
Appreciate
I see all yous up the mountains as well, doing the cold water stuff. Massive Wim Hof fans, including myself. And yeah, we'll touch on all that shit, but I always go back to the start of my guess. Kind of where up and grew, how it all began. We'll start with yourself, Luke.
Yeah, so I mean, I was right into football and that when I was younger. I was always quite sporty and stuff. And our dad's grandparents, he came across in a war from Germany and Poland. So our Oma, our granny was German, our granddad Opa was Polish. And all I remember of my Opa when I was younger was this big, strong, like, just a typical man. Do you know what I mean? He was working the peat fields. He was like, employed a lot of guys doing that, and anytime I seen him he just looked powerful. And then go to dad as well. Dad's a big guy who's kind of over 6 foot. And for me, just in my head when I was younger, when I was like 12, 13, I just wanted to lift weights. I just seen these guys. Sounds a bit weird. Like, I used to, you look at the magazines and see these big strong men and think, fuck me, man, I want to be like that. And when I turned 16, I went straight to the gym and just started lifting. I just loved it, that feeling of kind of, for me, it was like improvement every day. I could always improve. So I'd go and do bicep curls, and I could always do one more, and bench press and all that kind of good stuff. And then it was just being from the Highlands for me, watching, obviously, William Wallace, Braveheart, bullshit kind of thing. But having that vision of like the modern day kind of Highland warrior kind of thing. But I don't think, because like for me back then, there wasn't that many big, strong men in Scotland to look up to as such. And it was always, I was always questioning why we, as a nation, why don't we have these big warriors that we did have when you know, William Wallace and that was there. And that's how I kind of, in my head, that's what really got stuck into my head. I wanted to be this kind of strong man and really kept pushing on. And I think my first competition was, I was 27 when I first started competing, so I was quite late into it. It wasn't like an instant thing. It wasn't a flash in the pan, so I had to really work hard and just loved it, man. It was just, from that first wee competition I did in Inverness, it was a deadlift competition. We had maybe like 10 or 15 people watching.
Spectating, yeah.
And like from the instant, it was like I was ripping my shirt off, and that buzz I got from competing in front of a crowd. And I think you touched on it being from a wee village. It's, you don't have that many people there. We didn't have like a big school or a lot of like people in the town, in the village. So as soon as you start going to competing in front of 10,000 people, I was just buzzing, man. And I was just hooked. That kind of adrenaline just took me. And then, yeah, that was it. Just thankfully my face fit. I've kind of fitted into the sport. The promoters seemed to get on well with me. I got on well with them. And yeah, just started to kind of grow and grow and grow, and and here we are now, you know, talking to yourself.
Yeah, lucky bastards, eh? how did that affect you then, Tom, seeing your big brother doing that? Did that enhance you? Did that help you a lot? Or were you thinking, I want to beat him straight away?
Yeah, I mean, well, obviously when I was younger as well, I was football, you know, football daft, anything like that. You know, it's Glasgow Rangers when I grew up, all through my life. And then when Luke started the gym and started kind of the strongman, I thought, I'm never ever going to do this sport. Like, I was like a skinny Peter Crouch, you know, Scottish version of that. So I was just like, it's not for me, you know. And then I think I was 13. I was watching it on TV, you know, the Marius Puskunovskis, the Derek Poundstones. Those were the physiques. So they had like the abs. And then I seen other strongmen that were the guts. And I was like, these guys aren't athletes, you know, like fat guys smoking fags and stuff, lifting weights. So I was like, you know, I wasn't really into that. And then I think it was like 15, Luke said, or come to the gym with me. So I started at my local gym, and yeah, I mean, I hated every kind of minute of it. I mean, the pain I was feeling the next day, girls lifting more than me, other people lifting more than me. The muscles of like guys that I'd be going for 5-6 years, him just like benching. I was like benching 140 at the time. I was like benching the bar. I was like, how the hell are people doing this? And then I think it was more when Luke did do his first competition, I went down to support him. And it was like when these guys were lifting the cars and the logs and I was seeing it face to face, I was like, this is different than TV. This is different than just going to the gym. And the crowd as well, like there was a few thousand there and seeing Luke do what he was doing. And then I did the fan event. I was just doing some big farmer's carry and won that. And I was like, I'm quite strong. So went back home, joined a kind of gym in Inverness and kind of took off from there. Luke took me under his wing. A few other boys that are in Inverness took me under their wing as well and kind of just showed me the direction to go in. I mean, had mates that did it, but they went off in the wrong direction. And I just wanted to be like focused on something, you know, sport was my whole life. And I just wanted to be good at something, you know, prove that I could do something and to like kind of follow in Luke's footsteps and kind of, I wanted to quit all the time. I mean, I was in the most uncomfortable position in the gym. You know, I hated talking to people, hated being around people, but to kind of force myself in uncomfortable situations, to follow in Luke's footsteps and then to enter my first competition, I think it was like 18 years old. Luke threw me in the deep end as well. I mean, I wasn't allowed to do the junior stuff. It was more the opens and stuff. And I remember, I think it was the first one, I came fifth in Scotland. I made Luke win the title. So that again was a special feeling, you know, seeing your brother win the title, me come top five at 18 years old. And then that was when I was like, yeah, geez, I can be good at this sport. And that's when I went to UK, seen Eddie Hall, and I was like, this is next level, this now. You know, I'm never going to get near any of him. I thought he was big. And then see Eddie Hall and Lawrence Shally, you're like, this is just, I was just like fanboying. But for me, it's the buzz as well, you know, that when you lift those weights and you see improvements every day, it's like a drug to me, you know, the buzz you get, the adrenaline in your body, it's just unbelievable. And you can't really explain it, but like, it sounds weird, but I hate doing the like, barbell and dumbbell work. I think that's the most boring thing. But then when you get your hands on a log, Atlas stones, like lifting cars, it's like that's a buzz that you know, any human needs
to try. Did you doubt yourself a lot then, Tom? Did your brother play a massive part on helping you progress?
Yeah, 100%. All through school, everything in my life I doubted myself on, you know, like even kind of being a decent footballer as well, I was doubting myself, like I couldn't get to the next level, wasn't confident enough in. But then Luke was always at my side, you know, from day one, saying, you know, you can be the next big thing. And then again as well, but that was again, and then I had other athletes as well, like Eddie Hall saying, you're going to be the next big thing. But then that got a lot of pressure on me, so I couldn't like drill in that pressure good, you know. I was like, oh, Tom's going to be the next big thing. I thought, yeah, I'm going to be the next big thing, and started getting lazy and not working hard, just to think, oh, you know, if Eddie Hall's saying that already, you know, I must have made it. So then I kind of stopped working as hard, and then was getting beat at competitions I should have won. And then I was like, right, I need to kind of get a kick up the arse here and actually, you know, train to be the best. So
I hate labels, but you were diagnosed with Asperger's?
I was diagnosed with Asperger's.
What age?
A young age. I can't remember roughly. I think it was...
just when you're in the academy.
I think it was before. I think it was... through primary school, I was getting tests, but I think it was end of primary school, secondary. But that was a massive hurdle in my life. I mean, like... Luke going on a night out, I would be phoning, screaming, like, where are you not going out? I couldn't even go on a bus, or like, I went from Invergordon to Ferne, which is a 10-minute bus journey, and that was my first time doing that, I think, when I was 13, 14, and it was a massive, massive achievement. And like, you know, for other people it's not, but for me it was. And to get past hurdles like that, I kind of, in school they never gave me a really big chance. I mean, some teacher said to me, you're never going to be like successful in life, and you're never going to get a wife, you're never going to move out your house. And I was like, it played on my mind for a long time. I was like, what am I going to do? You know, I don't have any grades in school, I've left school, fourth year, working with my brother-in-law, and just dropped out of that as well. So then it was like, when I said, when I got to the gym, I was like, right, I need to do something in my life. And I moved out my house, my parents' house, got myself a girlfriend, got married, then started getting more successful in the sport. And yeah, having Luke there to kind of push me through it, like, you know, being in the interviews, I put my head down going, couldn't say yes or no, you know. And that was the hard part about strongman. Physically, I knew I was capable of doing stuff, and I knew I could do the lifting and stuff, but then the interviews before it, interviews after, the fans, I was like, Jesus, not football. I didn't know you expect this to be in a straw man. So going from like a car park to 15,000 people, that just put me all wrong. You know, I just could not cope with that in my mind. Like I said, I'd have to look there. Even after events, Luke would have to come out and be like, you know, your brother did good. And I would be like, yeah. So it's kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I just want to get autism out there, you know, like, yeah, I've got a label, but I'm not different than anybody else, you know, and I've proved I'm one of the strongest guys in the world, getting successful, Luke, as well, and building a profile that I'm proud of. And like, I mean, I've worked with a lot of people that were the same as me, you know, and I'm a big advocate for it, and I love everything.
Yeah, phenomenal, mate. I love that. Even the teachers, I used to listen to a man called Les Brown, and he says people's opinion of you doesn't have to be a reality.
Yeah, yeah.
And for people telling you this and that, it shows you how strong a character you are. Now, labels, I know people who's got a great life from the outside, got all the money in the world, that are committing suicide. You've been labelled with something, but you've not let it stop you. You've kept pushing through, and I don't know if it was Einstein that says it, but don't let your schooling get in the way of your education. Like, yeah, everybody sees the world differently, and you're fucking second strongest man on the fucking on this planet Earth, which is a phenomenal achievement. So I take my hat off to you, and especially people watching this will take inspiration that no matter if you get labelled, you can do what the fuck you want. 100%. You can make changes, you can kick on, you can strive to keep constantly bettering yourself. When you knew your brother was diagnosed with that, was that another push and incentive for you to keep training hard when you knew he got the buzz for it?
Yeah, man, for sure. I mean, for me, I'm like a big family guy. You know, I'm the oldest of five siblings, so I've got a duty, I suppose, in my head to look after them all, even though Tom's 6'8", second strongest man in the world. But, like, mentally, Tom wasn't quite there yet, you know, when he started to come on the scene and stuff. And I remember when Tom did get diagnosed and stuff, it was Mum that, bless Mum, geez, oh, she went through hell and back again, you know, to kind of make it that. A lot of teachers just thought Tom was a bad kid, you know, growing up. It wasn't like he didn't have any additional needs. It wasn't autism or Asperger's. It was just Tom didn't want to go to school, and they were. It was like a fight for Mum to kind of take it up to whoever it was she had to deal with. So it was years she had to do this, you know. And then when Tom actually got diagnosed with Asperger's, it was like a relief almost, you know. It was like, right, okay, now we can get the teachers and the support teachers to help Tom, and kind of we can analyze it a little bit more, and that took a lot of time. So like Tom says, a lot of teachers said, you know, you're not going to do anything, but there is, you know, that's just, I suppose, the stereotypical view maybe that they have of people with additional needs. But I mean, but for me, yeah, it made me, seeing Tom from a young age, kind of Tom just touched on it, getting on a bus from Invergordon to Fir, and it's only 10 minutes. But doing that little things, that's what I took inspiration from. It's like, it was so far out of Tom's comfort zone to do that, but he went and did that, and he's proven, he's breaking down these boundaries. I can do stuff by myself, I can do that, I can get a job, I can have a girlfriend, I can do this, I'm going to compete with you. So for me, that's driving me more, because it's a million times harder for Tom to do that than it is for me. I'm okay. I'm, you know, I've got my own issues, but fortunately, I can speak in front of people. I can go on a bus. I can do all this. This is just things that me and you probably take for granted. Whereas Tom, like I say, it's just a little bit more difficult. So
then Tom comes more of an inspiration to yourself as well. Yeah, if you're having a down day, if you're losing a bit of motivation, you see Tom showing up, you're thinking, well,
big time, man.
He's making moves.
Yeah, man, 100%. I mean, you can't not. I mean, when I watch Tom train, especially now, how strong Tom is, you know, when you see him with his Atlas stones and stuff, it's such an inspiration. But for me, it's more of an inspiration that the story that Tom has, the journey that Tom's been on to get here, there's no one else in our strongman game as successful as Tom with, you know, Asperger's or kind of additional needs. And that's, for me, that's a huge inspiration. It's an inspiration to anyone out there that's watching Tom. You know, it's like, we've said it before, it doesn't matter what people label you as or where you're from. Those are just kind of, I think that's the generation or the world we live in. People are too used to making excuses and stuff, you know. So, whereas Tom's got all the excuses in the world not to be successful, just stay in his room, be a recluse, but he's not. He's smashed that boundaries, and I mean, here he is. You don't get him to shut up now. You know, it's just, which is awesome. So it's like, I'm just so proud to see how how Tom's evolved into this person that he is now, man.
It's phenomenal what you two are achieving. I know you've broke world records, which we'll touch on, but you are very well respected in the circuit of other bodybuilders and strongmen, and you are very well liked, very humble guys. You've come across very well educated as well, and even striving towards you. I can see you're the sensitive one.
I'll start crying in a minute.
But it's, it shows that things can be achieved by your mindset. Your mindset's a powerful tool, no matter what you set it to. Like, I believe I'm the best interviewer on the planet, and people laugh, people say, but I just genuinely believe that. If you don't believe it yourself, nobody else will. There's no point in dumbing yourself down to try and fit into everybody else's boxes, and people say, oh, he's arrogant, he's got ego. Fuck that shit. Like, I'm not going to stop my beliefs and visions to make you feel any better or make your life feel better. I believe in what I believe in. We've all got one life. We've all got the earth inside is what we can achieve. Anything can be got. Everything is limitless. You guys have set your goals out and you have smacked everyone out of the park. You were, is it strong? Were you Scotland Strongman 5 years in a row?
5 years in a row.
What's the lead up to it? What's the planning to do that?
It was, for me, it was quite quick. I went from doing a competition in Inverness, met one of my good friends now, Peter, and he's like, why don't we do Scotland Strongest Man? I'm like, fuck off, mate, don't be daft. I'm just some dafty, you know, some wee scrawny whatever. And I was working offshore, so I was working the oil and gas industry, and I was working in Hamburg at the time off Scotland Strongest Man. And so I was due to fly back to Edinburgh on the Friday morning from Hamburg. And on the Thursday, I was like, fuck. Just doubting myself. You know, I'm like, stupid. What am I doing? Like, what a stupid thing to try and become Scotland's Strongest Man. I've just been training bodybuilding. I'm not even lifting that much and this and that. So finished work at 7, went out in the pub. I was drinking till about 5 o'clock in the morning. My flight was at 6. And I'm like, speaking to the barmaid, and she's like, Luke, you must go and pack your taxis here in half an hour. I'm like, nah, fuck that. I'm done. I don't want to do it. I'm and then she's like, no, you've got to do it. You'll kick yourself. And so I was like, right, fine, I'll do it. Went up, got my bag, got in the taxi, blazing, I was steaming, got to Edinburgh. I had to drive from Edinburgh to Dumfries, where the Scotland's Strongest Man was held. And we got there on Friday evening. Slept, woke up Saturday morning. I was the first one into the competition venue. It's a guy, Stuart Murray, that runs Scotland's Strongest Man. Really nice guy. Introduced myself to him. Hi, Stuart, I'm Luke. He said, hi, Luke, pleased to meet you. Just take a seat. And then all these big fuckers come in, and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And I've seen them on TV, you know, I'm like, oh, it's that fucking Ken Nowicki, that's fucking whoever. And all these guys have competed on TV, and I'm like, oh, this is so stupid, I'm going to make a right twat myself. Long story short, I didn't make a twat myself. I won that first show I did, I won, and I went on to win every show for the next 5 years. So, you know, we talk about self-doubt. I almost kind of sabotaged my chance by going drinking for almost 12 hours before a competition, but that's because of my head. That's because I was doubting myself, and I'm thinking these people are better than me. In reality, they're probably doubting themselves, thinking that everyone's better than them, and you've just got to go and do it, and just don't worry about it, really. Just go and have a good time, and that's what I did. And like I say, if I didn't do that competition, I wouldn't be here today, you know, chatting to you and
traveling the world.
Yeah, man. It's
how does that then, to win that 5 times, and then your younger brother comes in and wins it? Is there a lot of competition between you? Or, because I know I've seen your videos when you're constantly backing each other, when you're no matter what event it is. But then does it, because of, you want to be a winner.
Yeah.
So obviously if you fucking want to, well, Tom's smiling thinking, yeah, I've got one up in him, but you do want to win. How was that then? Did you see him, I'm going to knock him off his crown of being Scotland's number one? And do you then think, I need to keep putting the pressure on Tom? How does that work to being two brothers in that competition?
I mean, when I think you were on your, I was came second, I think, to him twice, and he won his first 3 titles, and then I came on, and I think it was twice, and I was just like, come on, man, like, third time lucky or something, and then I finally did it. But Luke came second. I think we want to keep the title in the Stoatman household, you know, and that's what we've said for every competition. If we can one or two, you know, first and second every comp, it's coming back home to Invergordon, so we don't care. And I mean, for the last 7 years, it's been in the Stoltman household, which is a mental achievement in Scotland. So, but it was always going to come for Luke. You know, I couldn't let him keep winning it. But I mean, I don't mean it's a rivalry there. Like no. you see the videos of how supportive Luke is shouting at me at the world's just passed, and then vice versa. So we always want the best of each other, and that's what brings it out in us. You know, it's if we can just help each other as much as we can, and that's what advantage we've got. We travel to these comps together. And he's like in my corner, I'm in his corner, whereas nobody else has anybody else. So.
Do you think you could do that, Tom, if your brother wasn't there?
No way, no. I mean, the biggest example for me, I didn't really think much of it until World's Strongest Man. Like, that's just past. That's when you could hear him on the TV. Like, and I mean, I had one bad event and my head went right down. And I mean, having him to kind of give me the positive talk and say, like, you know, you can still do this, you're still in this comp, and then to go through and kind of battle out to the end, and him shouting was, that's when I knew, like, geez, if he wasn't here, I would have probably crumbled at the first hurdle. So 100%, if it wasn't for Luke, then there wouldn't be, like, the Stoltman brother, wouldn't be Tom, there wouldn't be him, so.
Yeah, amazing. What about, what's the training like for, like, we'll start off with the Scotland Strongest Man. Mm. How do you go about pulling cars and throwing up logs, and if you've got all that stuff planned? Because I know you worked on oil rigs, obviously you went full time now into what you're doing, but how is it hard is it then? Because I'd imagine there'd be a lot of funding then involved to do that kind of shit.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, you know. And when I first started doing Strongman, whatever, there wasn't anything in the Highlands. There was no Atlas stones, there was no log presses, there was no cars, you know, anything like that. So we, Tom and I, kind of basically have taken Strongman or Strongman equipment into the Highlands, and kind of, we now got our gym, which we have, it's like fully equipped. We've got log presses, yokes, farmers, full range of Atlas stones. It does take a lot of, I mean, I usually quote about £1,000 a piece of equipment. So say if you need a log press, £1,000, Atlas stones, £1,000. And if you're buying like 100 pieces of equipment, you know, it's a lot of money. So it's, thankfully, with oil and gas, you know, the money that I was earning there was reasonable, it was good, so that helped me finance the gym we now have. But that was over, I mean, I was 16 years in oil and gas, so it was a long time. It wasn't just, again, it wasn't just a 1 year thing. It kind of, that progress and that journey, again, that I keep talking about, it doesn't just happen. And I think that's where Tom and I have that more, like, our feet are more on the ground, because we appreciate it, because we've both done that, and I've done 16 years in some god-awful places working around the world, and I really appreciate what I have now, being home, being able to see my wife every night, being able to train with Tom in the gym, having a business. You know, that to me is such an amazing feeling, you know, compared to what it was. So it's there is companies, and thankfully now, you know, sponsorship and stuff, people send up equipment to us, but it's not cheap, but it's invested in yourself. So, you know, this is our business, this is our gym, is our office, so we need to have, so say you're buying, you know, an office worker has their computers, whatever, and desks and shit like that. We have log presses, Atlas stones, 4,000 kilos worth of weights, whatever else we need, you know, all these specialist bars. Yeah. So it's just investing in ourselves, and that's what we need.
Yeah, it's your life, it's your business. Because I've seen your videos on YouTube. You've got your own YouTube channel as well. We'll plug that straight away. We'll put a link in the description for people to come across and watch your videos, daily vlogs in the ice. You're eating over 10,000 calories a day. How the fuck do you consume that food? Do you struggle or do you enjoy it?
Food's the hardest part of it all, 100%. Sure. I mean, well, I've been with a nutritionist called Nathan. I went on before Luke. I think it was about a year ago. And so before him, I was kind of just doing it myself, you know, chicken, rice, that basic stuff that, you know. And then when I went to him, that's when I kind of learned, Jesus, I've not been eating him. Like, he was, like, I was 11 eggs in the morning, 4 bits of bacon, 2 sausages, a bowl of cereal. I'm like, like, I thought a bowl of cereal was enough, you know. So then, I mean, not since we're worlds. I mean, I was up 181 kilograms, and it's just bigger comps. So when you're peaking for a comp, the food is unbelievable. I mean, you're talking, I was peaking at 12,000 calories, burger, but it's not all healthy foods. That's the thing with bodybuilding, strongman. We're, using calories and carbs to fuel our workout. So we need the burgers. I mean, I eat donuts every day, four a day.
It's some people would say that was actually
that's
okay.
That's a great diet. So yeah. I mean, like burgers and everything. But yeah, 10 to 12,000. But even like burgers and donuts get sickening after eating them every day, 7 days a week, you know. But for me, diet is 100% the hardest part.
Yeah, because people say you are but eat. So how does that affect you mentally? How does that affect the heart and stuff, the kidneys, the livers with all the sugars and salts, and does that play a massive part in your mind?
I mean, it's the diet gets more severe the closer we get to a competition. So it's, you know, and Tom, that's what we're saying, kind of for the peak, that's when we're on the most severe diet, your 12 eggs, whatever, you know, that higher calorie, but then we'll drop it back after the comp. But yeah, we get health checkups, we get our blood test, kind of ECGs done in our hearts and stuff. So we're in pretty good shape considering, you know, it's not the most, obviously a lot of red meat we eat because it's you know, it gives us a lot more strength. Me personally, I find when I'm eating steaks, kind of anything red meat, my energy levels are up as well. My testosterone seems to be more enhanced, should we say. So, but yeah, it is a worry. I mean, we're not idiots, you know. It's kind of, you're pushing your body to that extreme for our goal. You know, our goal is to be the strongest man in the world. So you have to be prepared to take that, you know, put your body through anything. So if you want to be the fastest man in the world, you're going to put your body through risk. Marathon runners, swimmers, you know, all these elite level athletes, to be the best in the world, you have to make sacrifices, you know. So it's like yourself, you know, you're the best podcast guy in the world, you're gonna have to make sacrifices. That's what we're doing at the moment with our bodies. So it's weighing up that risk and reward kind of ratio, and also having kind of supportive wives and family, you know, that see that vision. Look, we're getting checkups, we're looking after our bodies, we're not idiots, you know. I'm not going to do this for another 20 years, that's not my goal. I want to do this maybe for another couple of years, capitalise as much as I can. Tom and I win World Strongest Man, boom, right, that's it. You know, you look at Eddie Hall, he won at one time, he pushed his body to the absolute limit. I mean, I was there when he won it, and it was like, yeah, it was like on the edge of dying, basically. Would we be willing to do that? I would, you know, to reach my goal, I'd be willing to push my body to that very limit where I'm like, right, if you do this for one more month, I think that's what Eddie got told, you get do this one more month, you might die. So that's what you've got to do to become the best.
So it's live or die mentality.
Yeah, man, for sure. And that's what we're looking at. Mm. So it's do that, and then we can concentrate on other things that we want.
The doors are open. They're already opening for you because of the successes we've got, but you know yourself, the doors just, everything just tenfold, and that's the plans. It's trying to secure your family's future as well. And
for, sure.
for people who will get a better understanding of this, it's not just strong men who everybody thinks that they're fearless, this and that. It's to get a better understanding of the sacrifices, the pain, the misery, like anything in success, there's always sacrifice. There's always, we spoke earlier, keep trying to level up. But every time you try to level up, there comes a new wave of hate, there comes a new wave of problems. Yep. It's to keep pushing through the barriers, and probably every month you'll think, fuck this, I'm just going to quit, I'm just going to get back in my bed and not achieve anything. How you spoke there and support your wives and stuff, how does that affect him seeing he's eating all the time? I'd imagine there'd be a lot of tears, I'd imagine a lot of injuries, a lot of pain, thinking you're not good enough. How does that affect everyone around you?
It's tough, you know what I mean? For me last year, not making the final of Worlds, like I was a miserable fucker, you know, coming home, and like I felt like everyone down, you know, so that was tough for me. So Cushy, my wife, she takes the brunt of that, and it takes a big person to, you know, be that punching bag. And that's where the support, I think, of family members, of wives, partners, whatever, that is really so critical sometimes, because we're, although Tom and I are brothers, you know, we're still, like we touched it, we're there to win for ourselves. If we don't win, we lose ourselves. You know, that's the thing. We lose on our own. We win on our own as well. But it's tough for them. You know, there's not holidays. There's no kind of nights out. There's no parties. You know, it's weddings, birthdays. We can't really go to them because we've got to train. And it does create a lot of kind of problems. I'm not going to lie. You know, our relationships aren't perfect. We have gone through ups and downs and stuff. It's just part of you know, this is all new to us as well. So it's like, you know, where we're from in Invergordon, there's nothing like this. So it's like you're thrust into this semi-limelight, and you're now, people are wanting to speak to you, people are wanting to get, you know, your attention and stuff, and it's kind of learning to deal with all that and kind of trying to stay focused, you know, stay focused on that goal that we have of being the best in the world and providing for our families and making sure that they know that that's what we're doing it for.
Yeah,
you know,
because you're world record holders as well. Is it Atlas Stone for you, Tom?
Yeah, Atlas Stone
for me. How was that? How did that come about? Did you just keep getting stronger and stronger every year? Was that always a goal for you?
I mean, it wasn't really a goal to do the heaviest one, but it came about, I got invited to the Arnold's Classic in America. There's like a pro show, but you can go over there to do record breakers. So Luke went for the log and I was like, I'll give the stone a bash. So I think I had to beat 2.56, was it? 2.56. Well, I got 2.65 in America, and then 2 months later I broke it again and got 2.86. So yeah, 286 kilogram at the store.
That's unbelievable.
That was possibly one of the hardest training cycles I've ever gone through in my life. Like, with, like you say about the wife's, like, the sacrifice, and, you know, it's like with me, I'm still young and my wife's young. We're 26, and you want to go out with your mates, you want to have some fun and go on holidays. But like with that, it was pushed her to the side, pushed my family to the side, stayed in my house, and it was eat, sleep, and gym, and that was all I did. But like, they find it hard, but then once you do the rewards, you know, it's unbelievable. But like the wife, for the support for that, with the autism and the gym, I mean, it was unbelievable. But yeah, I did the 2.86 world record, but then I've got also the longest stone run in the world, 10 stones, did 41 seconds. That was 100 to 200 kilograms. And then the 5 stone run at Giants Live, Europe's Strongest, Britain's Strongest, yeah, Man. Britain's, it was 19 seconds.
Oh, it was 16.
Oh, 16. So that was, and again, I think it was 100 to 200 as well. So yeah, I'm known for the Atlas Stones.
And you got the log press.
Yeah, so I've got the British record for the log press, 221 kilos. I got the world record in training, but then when I went for the world record, I just missed it by a ball here. So it was.
What's the difference from doing it in training and then doing it in the arena? Is it a massive difference because of the pressure? More pressure.
I think it can be different as well. It's different equipment. So it's the log press for me, for example. I use my own log press, but in competition, it's a different log press. So that kind of hinders it. It could be
the grip,
and it could be like the spacing of the handles, like a few mil off here and there. And you know, when you're lifting that type of weight, you know, a few mil here and there can make all the difference. So it's just, like you say, that added pressure when you've got crowds there. You know, it's, you don't want to make
an ass of yourself.
You don't want to fuck up, because it's like, oh Jesus, he was lifting 230 kilos in training, and he's only lifted 180. That doesn't, you know, it's like things like that. But for me personally, I usually prefer to do it in front of a crowd, because I get that adrenaline, and I thought, you just get that boost from the crowd, and people are like cheering your name and that, man. It's class, you know.
Because I've seen videos. Who was it? Shit himself. Was it you? Doing the Atlas Stone.
No comment.
Oh, you must, because of the pressure. Because people's fucking eyeballs have popped out and legs have broke.
That's the first time I've ever shit myself doing something. I was doing that prep for the world record, but that was bad, man. I tried to wipe and I had toilet roll on my hands.
Because you have the sticky, it's like leg wax you put on the stick of the stone. And he's like, look. I shot myself, and I'm like, I'm not coming in the toilet with you, mate. So he came out with all toilet paper stuck to him, and it's disgusting. Aye, but it's some pressure.
The pressure that you put on yourself and your body to extremes, but that goes, like, I watch a lot of David Goggins and the running that he does, just 200-mile runs. Some of them are doing 300-mile now. It's unbelievable. Who's the guy who done the mile under 4 minutes? It was never broken. As soon as he done it, then everybody started smashing it out. Like, your record, somebody will blow in your ass trying to think, I want to beat that bastard. Mm-hmm. So it's constant improvement. The bodies and the mindsets,
definitely,
they are improving. Human beings are improving. Majority are getting weaker mentally, but there's people out there pushing the boundaries, and yous are living proof that yous are pushing them to the new limits. And it's good to see, do you know what I mean? That
it's cool.
People from Scotland, I don't think Scotland gets the recognition that it deserves. There's so many talented people in this country that are smashing it, and yous are two of them just now that's doing it. We're seeing an event, Is it 10 events in a competition? In the Worlds, is it 10?
The Worlds, it's 10, yeah. Yeah,
10
so,
to 12.
Yeah, so there's in the World's Strongest Man, you get put in heats initially. Mm-hmm. So there's five events in the heats. The top two of the heats get to go to the final, which is then five or six events. So in the one day shows, it's maybe five or six events that we do, but then the Worlds is over
five,
kind of 10 days or so, seven days or whatever it is. It depends on the budget. Sometimes it's 10 days. Sometimes.
How many events all in did it just choose from 10? So maybe like 15 different events, but they'll choose 10 on the day. Do you get to know what's coming up?
Yeah, we get to know.
Yeah, we get to know, yeah. So we get to train, kind of prep our set bodies for them. Mm-hmm. Usually, 90% of the time we do.
Yeah, there's a couple of... Like, sometimes they'll throw in like a...
wee curveball.
Mystery event.
Yeah, a mystery event or something.
So then you just find out when you get out there. So
it's quite funny. A lot of guys get a bit freaked out by these mystery events. It's like, oh, wonder what it could be. And it's like nothing that we haven't trained for, you know. It's like... But a lot of guys get very anal over it all, like the measurements and this and that. And but like, it's the kind of principle is the same. We're picking up stuff and putting it down again. That's all we do. So if we can't kind of get our brains to work, even though we don't know about the events, you know, we're doing something wrong. Do you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like we should be prepared enough. If they want to throw in a different event, like in Worlds, they did... They changed one of the events because there was a hurricane on last, like at the time, and then so we had to do a farmer's walk, which is like a grip event, pick it up, run, but it was for distance. Mm. So that was like a wee curveball they threw in. And
was it inside as well? First time we're all just being inside, you know? Yeah. We were prepped for outside, so.
Mm-hmm. It's just a few different things, but usually we know, we get like a couple of months kind of notice. Yeah,
because I imagine people would panic because I'd imagine anybody ever think it gets a favour of a certain type of competitor, where they think, oh, that's our strongest events there. Can that piss you off a bit? Because obviously, if you've got the Atlas Stone, you're going to smash it every time. If you've got the log pressure,
I don't mind about the Atlas Stone.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I mean, it's. I think you just got to go on with an open mind and think, well, usually everyone's going to, in that set of events, that five or six events, someone's going to have a good event, you know, and you've just got to accept that. But as an athlete, we should go in there and thinking, right, all those events are good for us. We shouldn't have a weak event, and that's your mentality needs to be like that. You know, I don't care what events are. You know, I've just got to go on and focus and worry about myself. If I'm thinking about other people, oh, that's Eddie Hall's event, that's Adam Bishop's event. I can't be worrying about that because I can't do anything about what they're going to lift. Mm-hmm. All I can do is control my own.
It's quite balanced out as well because everybody's different heights, different weights. So some, not necessarily the height would be an advantage for some events. Mm-hmm. Do you find that as well? That is there a certain weight that there's a limit to be maybe 23 stone plus? Or is there people out there who's low 20s and that are smashing it?
I mean, the world's strongest man, Novikov. How old is he? Like he's
135k, so like 125.
So yeah, he's
pretty light for.
Yeah, for a
he's one of the lightest guys to win it. But anything over 105 kilos in body weight is classed as like heavyweight or open level. So then you've got a under 105 category, and then there's under 90s, 80s, and so on. So, but if you're over 105 kilos, you can compete against someone like Tom's size. So it could be like 75 kilos between you in reality. Like, but there's not really any cutoff. There was a guy, Gavin Bolton, he was
201 kilograms, that's like 30 stone or something.
Big Welsh lad, that world's
unbelievable.
Like, he was the heaviest world's competitor ever.
Mm-hmm. That's too much now.
For me personally,
these days, I think for this, because it's more endurance now, world, you know, and I think carrying that much weight, I don't know, man.
It's a lot more dynamic now, you know, it's a lot more functional fitness. Like, you're doing a lot of running, there's a lot of repetitions now, and it's like max distance, max reps. It's not so much as, like, when you see the world's strongest man of old, it was like a lot of max lifts, like, so static weights back then, but now it's. There is a lot more moving about, and you've got to be ready for that. So maybe carrying that 200 plus kilos is kind of
Yeah, so I used to watch the old school ones. I think it was John, is it John Paul Sigmarsson? Did he die?
Yeah,
his heart popped or something. Yeah, and then is it Magnusson?
Ah, Magnus Weir. Yeah.
Do you remember him? Was he Iceland or Finland?
Iceland, lad.
It's funny how everybody watches a strong man. Yeah, though, it's so popular worldwide. It's I think every man thinks they're strong. Yeah. Like people go to the gym with a bench of 80 kilo and 100 kilo and they think, right, they walk like me, a tight t-shirt and that, thinking, and then I've got used fucking monsters pushing 28 stone and I'm thinking, fuck me, how small actually am I? Does it make you like walk about, but do you feel overpowering when you walk into places? Like constant, there must be constant eyes on you because you go Glasgow, everybody's quite, they're short asses here. Do you know what I mean? The further you got, People seem to be bigger, but do you see a lot of eyes like fucking size of those boys?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people intimidated by us before we even talk. Even like in our gym, like we've opened it for a pallet, but the people are scared to come because it's owned by two big guys and some woman or guy walks in, they're like, geez, I shouldn't be here, you know? So by eye contact, yeah, there's a lot of people, especially like with me, because I'm like 6'8". I walk into shops and everyone just like, who's this guy? I'm like, starting to
cry. How big's your bed? Is it king size?
King size, I'm growing out of that.
I thought you were going to ask something else.
Wait till the cameras are off for that one. What's the planning then for a world strongest man? What is the planning for? You're just getting into hibernation? Or do you connect with other strong men, or do you just do your own thing?
Yeah, so that's what I said earlier. I kind of sat like put everything to the side. So like loads of sacrifice. It's like for me, those kind of competitions, I come first, and like the world's strongest man, the gym comes first. So like the wife will get pushed to the side, the family. You know, it's a bad thing, but like you said, to achieve your goals, you need to do that. And for me to be world's strongest man, it has to be 24/7. It has to be that graft until you win it, and that's what my attitude's right now. You know, I'll go into the gym. I don't care what Luke does out the gym. He can do what he does, but I'll do me, and I'll just do the best I can. And like, it's 100%. It's like, before World Strongest Man, that was like an addiction. I never felt like that, and my mind was so focused. I was so focused, and every day it was eating at the same time, recovery at the same time, training at the same time, and it just flows. So that's what I do. Like, I just get obsessed. And
that's all you've got to be, is obsessed, because I know, obviously, your mother passed away, which I'm sorry to hear, but that shit can affect you, like death. We don't know how to handle death in life. We don't know how, especially being strong men, or people think, oh, they'll be fine, but we don't know how to handle it. Like, people can go in their shell and think, fuck this, because I've known you've spoken in your videos that your mum was at every event. You never let that make you quit. You've kicked on. You have pushed yourself massively to keep kicking on. How did that play a massive effect? How did your mum pass, first of all, sorry?
Cancer.
So my dad was leukemia.
Was it?
Big, strong man, seen him deteriorate. It fucks with your mind, but part of me always thought he would survive, even though he got, he was in remission. And then he got the phone call, look, come back up to the hospital, and look, you've got 3 months to live. Part of me's thinking, right, he'll still survive, he'll be okay. Always, not my dad. It's not going to happen. Then obviously, when they pass, you think, fuck me, like, I spiraled. My drug abuse and everything went worse. But for years, you seem to have knuckled down and think, fuck it, I'm going to keep pushing. Did you battle with that to keep going?
Yeah, even now, like I get, like you say, I'm the emotional one, you know, so I probably cry every day about mum. You know, every day I kind of, there's certain things that I remember of her. That's like sunflowers, you know, that's why we got sunflowers and stuff. That was mum's favourite flowers. So I also cry, but I cry because I'm sad, but also because she inspires me all the time. You know, it's having that. Someone said to me, it was a therapist. I still see a therapist, but it's just because they're gone doesn't mean that relationship's gone. You know, so I can still hear mum in my head. I can still see her driving in front of our house and walking with the dogs. And, you know, that relationship's still there for me with mum. But at the time, it was like I didn't deal with it. I didn't deal with that grief. Mum passed, and then 5 days later, I went back to work offshore, away for 3 weeks offshore in the oil rig, you know. So I didn't deal with that grief. And then that, I spiraled, not necessarily with substances, drugs or alcohol, but in my marriage, you know, I kind of spiraled a little bit there. I went into like resenting my wife for having her family. So any time we'd go around to her parents for dinner, say, I would be like, I'd create a fight and I didn't want to go because she still had her mum and dad. And she, like, I felt that she didn't understand that, and she was like not getting it, that mum for me was the most important person in my life. She was the person that I went to, I kind of confided in. We built a house, dad's house, or mum and dad's house was there, and we're literally 20 seconds walk. So when mum got diagnosed with cancer, we got the land, built a house, because I knew dad was going to be alone. So fortunately, we've got the house there. But it's, like you say, it's seeing that person that you think is invincible and just deteriorate. That cancer is like, was like, and every day is like 500 plus people die in the UK of cancer, something stupid like that. It's phenomenal. It's and that's, it gets me so fucking pissed off that we haven't dealt with that. You know, we're letting people die. That's what I think. Like the doctors. So mum was going to doctors early doors, and she said she had this pain in her chest. So the doctors diagnosed her with, I think it was called Bornholm's disease, for a year. And then we had to go private, get a CT scan. A year passed by, then we went private. Got the CT scan, tumours everywhere in her body. And I was working down in Newcastle at the time. And I was just on the way to the gym, and mum phoned me. And I knew what the phone call was going to be. You know, I knew it was going to be, she's got cancer and it's terminal. Just in my head. I just knew it. I just fucking knew it. And she told me, and I had to pull over at the side. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it. You know, she had 6 months to live. So I drove home that night from Newcastle. I can't do this. So I went home, and I went down to the doctor's surgery to see the doctor that misdiagnosed my mum. And I would have killed him. I would have, like, point blank, I would have killed him if he was there. I was shouting, I said to the receptionist, I need to see this doctor. And she says, why? I says, well, he's just murdered my mum because he's misdiagnosed her for a year. And to me, he doesn't get held accountable. You know, that doctor gets to go home with his family, and I'm wanting to know if he's got that guilt. I don't think he's got that guilt, because the medical industry, and they do great jobs, I'm not slagging them off at all, but if you make a mistake in diagnosing someone wrongly for a year, when in that year she could have had treatment, could have survived, she could still be here. You know, you need to be held accountable. And I think that's an issue that we have. Thankfully, I didn't see the doctor, he wasn't there. And like, that was the anger, you know, the anger initial. And then that passed, and then it was the grief and the sadness and the confusion, and, you know, it's all those different things, and I still haven't dealt with it. Yeah. You know, it's
to fill the void, which is never going to go away. Like the constant working to progress, to be better.
Yeah.
It's the kind of escape as well for the method of thinking, the fucking pain that we're thinking.
Definitely.
Every day's a battle. Like the bitterness towards the doctor, and as well, and you're thinking, my mum passed because of him. But in life as well, though, everything does happen for reasons.
Yep.
It's to learn to adapt to the pain,
mm-hmm.
keep kicking on, but that's where it shows you your characters to go, okay, I know you get tattoos and stuff, but we still feel a presence there. Mm-hmm. When we're having our down days, we'll feel someday, okay, someday you have that wee moment. Like, I go up the mountains and I see a robin, and I think, right, that's my dad, to say that I'm on the right path. I don't know if I convince myself, or if I hear a song on the radio, I think, okay, I'm still getting guided. It just makes sense for me, and it can be difficult. Is that why you went into psychologist to get therapy?
Yeah, just I was struggling because for me it was like people die all the time, and no one wants to really listen to my sob story. You know, okay, my mum's died, but so is, you know, your old man, someone else's mum, someone else. And for me, talking about it and going on about it, I felt a little bit kind of self-absorbed and kind of, this is my problems. I thought people were kind of looking at me in a way that I don't really, not that people didn't care, but it wasn't really, me talking about to people wouldn't make it any better. And I was getting judged. I just felt I was getting judged. So me going into therapy and kind of seeing a therapist and talking about it, it gave me that safe place, I guess, to talk about just me and not be judged for talking about me. You know, she was there to help me and kind of make me see things. And, you know, with Kush, with my wife, I never saw that I resented her for having that family. It was the therapist that picked up on that. It's like, well, you know, you're fighting with Kushi, you're doing these other things. Have you ever thought about that she's still got her family? And like, it's a form of like resentment towards her. And that really hit home with me. I was like, fucking hell, you know what? That makes sense. Because she doesn't, I don't think she knows what I'm going through, but in reality she does, because she's with me every day. She sees me on my happy times, down times, whatever. And yeah, it's a tricky one.
It's painful. But do you think people treated you differently because you are strong men, as if they'll be fine, and not understanding that we're all vulnerable, we're all kind of scared, we're all kind of battling? How did you battle with it, Tom?
Yeah, so, well, obviously my mum was kind of my biggest person to go to as well, with the autism and stuff, because, like, Dad worked away, Luke was away, so every day of my life I was with her. So, and then obviously with the competition, she was there all the time. From day one, she would travel with me. I mean, I struggled. I kept all my emotions in. I kind of put that face on, you know, and was a happy, like, just went back to my normal life, didn't believe she was gone. Like Luke said, I seen her every day deteriorating, like, from walking to then being in a bed. I was like, how is this possible, you know? Someone that's out in the garden all the time, you know, fit and not smoking, no drinking, nothing. So to me, I was just like, it's not right. And then, yeah, even my wife, I just couldn't talk to my wife, don't talk to no one. But I kind of just started talking to myself and trying to bring memories back up, go somewhere myself, you know, in a hill and do, like, talk, just try and have 5 minutes to myself. And then, again, for me, it was just as hard as kind of saying to someone I had the autism, you know, because I was like, my big kind of biggest person in my life's gone, you know, like, what do I do? You know, it's, yeah, I've got Sinead, but I was thinking, should I just quit strongman? Just, I didn't want to do nothing, you know. And then, I mean, that's kind of when, I mean, not addiction, but like, I like to have a few drinks. I kind of drank a lot then as well, you know, went out with my missus a lot, but like, it was more just, not just weekends, it was during the week. And then I kind of was like, you know, I need to kind of get my life back on track. My mum wanted me to, you know, get a wife, move out the house and be successful at what I do. And I did the first two, get a wife and moved out the house. And then I, you know, I promised her I would win World's Strongest Man within 4 years of doing it. And like, so then I was just like, then I need to get shit together, you know. And then started talking to Sinead and she understood. I mean, because like, for me, like Mother's Days and all that kind of stuff, I absolutely hate. I know obviously Sinead still got her mum and, you know, dad and stuff, but like, I try and celebrate it now because, you know, there's still, Sinead's still got her mum. I try and just, she's like my mum figure now, you know. So, but my mum's never, obviously, I've got a tattoo of the sunflower that represents her. I put my World's Strongest Man trophy up beside her. So I always, like Luke said, think about her. And that's what the gym is for me. It's like a coping mechanism. Yeah. It's like the lockdown. If we didn't have the gym and I was locked in that house, like, there would be no way I could cope. I mean, there's been some days I'm in the house and not being at the gym, I'm just like, you know, I wish my mum was here. She would understand this. Because obviously you can't tell your wife everything. You can't talk to them. And like, for me, it was just really hard, especially with the autism. I just was like, it's my life over. You know, what do I do? But I said, it was just another hurdle, you know, and I kind of had to live with it and then support my dad. You know, we got brother, sister. We all just came together and kind of was like, right, you know, we need to do something and I'll be successful in life and not just strong men, but just be humble and be the guys who her mum and dad brought us up. And I started doing that. But yeah, hiding my feelings for a while and not letting me like accept that she's gone was the hardest part.
But that's the painful thing. But I tell you what, lads, man, she will be fucking proud of what he's achieving. The fact that he's just sitting here wearing your heart on your sleeve is unbelievable, because like, every Christmas and that as well, there's a, it doesn't matter how well, it doesn't matter if you won the worlds, you're sitting there still thinking, fuck, you would give everything up just for that 1 minute, just to sit at a park bench and have that discussion. That there's always something missing. And I don't know if I've dealt with my grief properly with losing so many family members and friends, but I just know working is hard. It kind of takes away the pain. Sitting here talking to you guys for 90 minutes, 2 hours, I feel free. I had Paul Gascoigne on him and he says he played football, he felt free, he lost friends and all his shit has went through. And this is what you are lifting weights, you just feel free, the pain's away, definitely. Everything's away. And for what he's doing, man, is brilliant. And like I says there, she'll be proud, man, for everything he's achieving. And But again, you know yourself, there is always that something missing, and we do become selfish because as yous are strong men, so people will not think yous have got feelings or emotions, and that could probably be more difficult for yous. But you've kicked on, you broke world records. Is it second in the UK as well, Tom?
In Britain, yes.
Yeah, Britain. Yeah. How was that?
That was more hard to take because I got beat by 0.5.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, I was always improving. Like, I came third in 2019 and then second in 2020. And obviously this year, I'm going to win it, no doubt about
good,
that.
Yes.
And hopefully Luke can get second. So, but yeah, that was hard to take because, I mean, losing by a point, 2 points fine, but 0.5, you're like...
How do you lose by 0.5? Is that time or is it
late
or what?
I think, I don't really know. I had to win the stones and the guy first had to come like three or four places down, but he had finished one higher or something and it was 0.5 and I was like... Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go.
But every year you've improved.
Yeah, every single year I've kind of done this sport, I've gone up a place. So, you know, it's big pressure this year because I went from 5th to 2nd in Worlds. Now I have to win it to get better. So
when does the World start this year?
It's meant to be
end of May.
End of May, June.
Do you get a pass or anything if you finish top three, or do you still got to go through prelims?
Yeah, top 10 is automatic. So, like, if the finalists, so the top 10 finalists get an automatic.
How many compete? Is it 30?
25 to 30, yeah.
And do you need to do prelims this year?
Yeah, so we all have to do the heats. Yeah, we all have to go out there and do the heats. So then it's sort of usually this year it was five groups of five. So I think this year it'll be the same. So we'll all have to do the heats. So even Tom and the guy that won at Novikov, Alexei, he'll have to do the prelims or the heats, and then the top two go to the final.
How long are the heats before the main event?
It's usually a day.
So you don't get time to rest?
No, they're tight with the budget. Like, so used to have a couple of days rest in between, but obviously last year with COVID and everything, it was kind of crushed in a kind of a week, I think, or 6 days.
Yeah, 7 days.
So it's, but it's good for us because I think we perform better in that sense where we don't have to, you know, waiting around for a couple of days in between events. It's like, you're out there, you just want to get on with it and crack on and kind of get it done. So it's probably better having it in a little 100%. Bit more.
I love that way, yeah.
I think.
When you both finished in the top 10 to be the first brothers ever to finish in the top 10, how was that feeling to be the strongest brothers on the planet?
I mean, that was possibly better than coming second because that was my dad was out there. It was Father's Day, the day off the
good.
Kind of, and then like obviously having the wives there. And like when I was out there, I said I just want to be in the final, you know, and same with Luke. And to do it, you know, two brothers doing it, and like it was just I was speechless, man. It was I was lost for words. I was just like, you know, I've done what I wanted to do, and then like next year just push up. But yeah, it was especially having dads and the wives there, just because like that was just an emotion thing, you know. Like my mum was looking down on us, and having the whole family there just to celebrate that day was.
Is there a lot of emotion after an event?
Yeah, I mean, well, I point out to the sky, you know, because I always. Like when I'm competing, I always say that's like my mum's there, and I'll always push that extra. Like I couldn't care if I died, you know. If I'm doing an event and I do 10 events and I have a heart attack, I'll die. But like I always picture my mum there, and like she's under the deadlift bar, and she just gives me that extra 10%. It's 100% with stones as well. I mean, I go to a place with stones that I don't go with any other event, and I think that's how I can channel just. Like, and like a cycle just goes so
fast. Why do you think that is, that you're so good at the Atlas stones?
I don't, to be honest, I don't even train much with them. I mean, in my training, I'm possibly one of the worst in training with them. I feel like I don't train as hard, but I think in competition, it's just, I don't know what I do. I don't know if you've seen it. I hit myself in the head and like psych myself up in a way that when I do other events, I'm more relaxed and chill, but I think it might just be the anger, like I'm thinking of like my mum being passed and like my wife and stuff, and just, I don't know, I just kind of not put pressure on, I just lift them up, like, I don't know how to explain
skills.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the height for the top half of the stone is beneficial for me, you know, because I just, I'm taller than the platform, but it's hard to explain because like Luke's good at one of the best at Atlas stones as well, and like other boys, but it's just, I don't know how I picked them up differently.
Ah, there's Tom and then there's the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what it is. Like, Tom's in a league of his own. So Tom did the 10 at Atlas Stone Run in Dubai. Was it last year, the year before? Whenever it was.
Yeah, 41.
A couple of years ago. And so the previous world record was just over a minute 10 seconds, something like that. Tom then came up and did 40.2 seconds. You know, so he broke a world record by over 20 seconds, which is huge. It's like 2 seconds a stone, which is massive. So like Tom's the Usain Bolt, you know, off Atlas Stones. Mm-hmm. He's just untouchable, you know, and every time Tom is maybe too kind of, I don't know,
it's just luck, isn't it?
Well, he says it's luck or it's through the tack.
No, it's an art, and it's still a craft.
That's because people ask me all the time, like,
do you get embarrassed about it?
No, well, I mean, I know I'm good, like, that's kind of caught, like, I know I'm good at the event, and like, it's one, like, if it came to me and then if I know, like, you know, 2 years Atlas Stones last event, I know that I'm going to win it. Like, that's what I'm always into, but I just don't know how I am that good at it, because, like, when I'm training, if you see me training, I train like everybody else in it, but I think I just go in it, like I said, like a psycho, and just go as fast and hard as I can, and if it drops, it drops. I don't kind of hold back. I literally just go 100% on it. Like, other people will maybe, like, hesitate a wee bit with it all, but I can trust the tacky I've got on and trust myself, so it's literally just 100%. And yeah, but I am confident with the stones. That's like, it's always at the last event of every competition you do, so I'm like, that's my event.
How's the come down after it? Because what goes up must come down. Imagine with the training, like, boxers going to 12-week camps and stuff, and after the fight it's like a release. How's the come down after an event?
For me, I get a major come down. I mean, like, especially after Worlds, you know, because obviously it was in November and Christmas came up, but like, I lose a lot of motivation straight afterwards, because like, I've achieved what I did there, and then you're just like, we don't have a comp for a few months. I just kind of, a major crash. It's all that kind of buzz and adrenaline you've had just goes out your body. But it's like, instead of like that 10-hour crash, it's like 2 or 3 week crash, and I'm just getting out of bed at like 10, 11 a.m., eating 2 meals a day, just no motivation, just drained, just because of all that kind of pre-workout energy you've just used for that whole prep. It just it hits me hard. Like,
but so, I think that's okay to recharge. That's probably 100%. You recharging the adrenaline kicks and the pressure to try to be the best. And do you end up losing weight after an event? Because usually a boxer will put on weight because they're strict. Obviously, if you're eating 12,000 calories, I'd imagine those calories drop significantly.
Yeah, well, I mean, I went from 180 at Worlds to then, after Christmas, being like 166, so I dropped quite drastically, you know. And again, that's just with the come down and everything, and it just lack of food, no motivation. But yeah, I dropped like 15 kilograms, you know, just no
that's
routine.
That's a lot, though.
Yeah, I think that was a bit too much, just because, like I said, you know, it's just sitting, you can't be bored doing nothing, you know. It's just you've gone and battered your body for 4 or 5 months, you want that month where you can just do what you want and not have to worry about anything, you know. So
the Worlds, you'd set a target to be Worlds number one, the strongest man on the planet, which is a phenomenal achievement. Did you set out to win it? When you finished second, were you going in a frame that I'm feeling good, everything's great, or were you still battling when you finished second last year?
Yeah, I mean, it was, when I went up to the final, there was a good event for me, and the thing that kind of, I was confident before the first event, and then when I did that slip in the first event, I dropped the anvil before the keg. I was like, it's not going to be my day, this is going to be when I kind of crumble, and I was going to, like, but then I still came fifth in that first event, so then obviously to look, I was like, oh, fuck my chances up, you know, I could have won that, I was on track to winning, and then that was when I was like to myself, nah, I'm going to crumble. But then it was kind of, then again, the Hercules Hold is my weakest event by an absolute country mile. Any time that's an event, I'll come last, so I prepped myself for the events around it, and then it was after I won the keg, and then I won the lull press, I was like sitting in third place, so I was like, I was, the stones are coming up, I could win, but the guy that was first had to do something like drastically wrong. So I mean, like I said, I was going there for podium, third, second or first place, and but when you get second place and you get that close and you're like, you made that one mistake that could change you from being number two to number one, you're like, you know, it was on me. I mean, Novikov, the guy who won it, deserves it, but if I just didn't make that mistake or held on for that 2 seconds longer, I could be sitting here as the best in the world. But it's just one of them things, you know, you don't dwell on it. I went home, got the trophy, and just it's in my back of my head now, you know, it's at my dad's house. I'm not going to look at it until the gold one's there. So
yeah,
that's the motivation
for,
I need
for 26 to years old, man. Like, I'd imagine you hit your peak when you're 29, 30s, 31s. I don't know. I genuinely don't. When is it to hit the peak of strongman? Because I'd imagine you're still growing, which is fucking madness to think.
It's probably like mid-30s.
Mid-30s, yeah. You say your strength. But it depends when you start as well. So it's Tom's got
the next 10 years to to butt theirs, whether it's at Brian Shaw's and
Seagrassen's,
you could potentially have 5-6 sitting in the mantle. Oh, like, yeah, do you know what I mean? And then you can just fucking sit and retire with the balls out. Yeah. What about yourself? How long do you think you've got left in the game? Look, have you set a mindset for that, or do you think?
I'm kind of thinking, like, maybe, I don't know. I just look for progression in myself. That's all I ask. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm progressing now. I gave up offshore this time last year, so I gave up that profession, as it were. So, really, I'm only a year into it full time. So, as long as I'm still progressing, I've got goals. I want to win world strongest man. You know. So, I don't know. However long my wife will
is that hard? Is that hard to think about? Because I had Liam Harrison on, who's a Muay Thai fighter, and he's in his 30s, but there's people in their 40s, that do the world, man, so it's all down to mindset.
Yeah, definitely.
But to come up and think, I've only got maybe 5 years left, 3 years left, can that affect you?
It affects me more in a positive way, I think, because I look back to thinking, right, well, I started at 27, how far I've come on, and I'm still progressing, and I'm progressing a lot more than some of the younger guys, so I know I've still got loads in the tank. Mm. For me, I'm quite confident in my own ability. So last year, I think it was just a combination of, I put a lot of emphasis into trying to get the log press world record, and that was like, that took a lot out of my body, and maybe I wasn't prepared as well as I should have been. But this year, you know, we talk about what's the prep for World Strongest Man. My prep starting now, you know, this is since World Strongest Man last year stopped, my prep for this year has started, you know, so it's that continual kind of preparation for it, you know. That's the biggest competition in our season. So I mean, I look at Tom Novikov, that's won it before, Brian Shaw. I mean, there's great athletes, amazing like athletes, but we've both beat these guys before, you know, so there's no reason in any given day why I couldn't beat anyone else in the world. That's
So if you see Tom finishing second and you're training with each other and you're beating him, that must give you the incentive why can I not be world champion?
100%, man. Yeah, I mean, we've got a kind of added kind of extra over anyone else in the world. I'm training, like, we get to train with each other, two of the top strongmen in the world. We have that every training session. So, like you say, Tom's the second best strongest man in the world, and I'm getting to train with him. So if I'm keeping up with him, then I'm there or thereabouts. And usually, look, training's training, but it's what you do in the competition, obviously, that matters. But it gives you a good insight into how things will go.
To be top 10 strongest men on the planet is a phenomenal achievement. How did that affect you when you never made the finals last year?
It was tough, you know. It was just a tough one. The kind of events I got, I kind of felt a bit, like, I was kind of fucked over a wee bit. I was like, fucking hell, I didn't get log press in my group. I'm like, well, that's weird. I'm the best log press in the world. Surely you'd have given me a shot. Normally, you know, I'd think I'd get squat. They gave me deadlift, which isn't, and it's just excuses, but I should have been more prepared. That's it. Long and simple answer is that, me personally, I wasn't as prepared as I should have been. I kind of assumed that I would get log press and squat. Didn't hit the dumbbell as hard as I should, didn't hit my deadlift as hard as I should. So that was me that kind of fucked up there. You know, that was my own. I'm quite critical of myself and how I prepare for things. And if I don't prepare as well as I should have done, that's on me. But it was tough, you know, coming back home, especially after Tom did so well. Everyone's buzzing for Tom, second strongest. But well done, Luke, you did shite, but sorry. You know? So it was kind of, it was a bit of a kick in the dick, you know, because it's tough and people don't see that. And I'm not taking any away from Tom, because I was buzzing. I was in tears the whole time watching Tom. So happy for him, and still am, you know. And I watch it back, I get emotional watching it back. Even talking about it, I'm so happy. But in my own self, I was very disappointed in my performance. And it just gives me that bigger fire now this year.
See, that can be hard though, even though he's a training with, he's got two of the strongest men on the planet training with each other. The positives of that, but there's also the downfall when you should be celebrating being second. There'd been a part of you thinking you're gutted for your brother, so you can't really enjoy it as much, even though you're buzzing for your brother, you're still thinking, bastard. I wish it was me, kind of. So it's constant. So I'd imagine it would be difficult. You do the ice therapy, same as myself, we're in the icy waters. Why do you do that for people who don't know?
I mean, obviously there's a mental health, which look, we're probably talking about, but the autism for me as well, like it's obviously with these hard times of lockdown, people like Asperger's need a routine and need the same thing every day. I need something to kind of, well, like escape from these kind of times, you know, you're locked in your house. And well, I did it, I started it for like the world strongest, like the recovery and hot and cold in the gym, but to do it in the sea and like going to locks really just makes me escape from kind of the life we're in right now and just takes me to like a different world, you know. You're like the buzz as soon as you go in there, everything in your body just like lights up and you're like, this is like your eyes ping open. It's like the best drug you can take. So for me, it's like, and another one, like the gym, it's an escape mechanism, you know. I kind of just, when I'm not at the gym, can go and go in a sea for 15-20 minutes and just enjoy life, and it's just like, wow, this is unbelievable. So that's why I do. I just think it makes you so positive, you know. It makes you, your day, if you do it in the morning, it starts your day right. Positive energy that you get after that as well. I mean, like, look, doing it's changed people's lives, and you can see that. It's when you take 8 or 9 people who are there, they're a bit depressed in the morning, as soon as they're out of there, the positivity they have is unbelievable. And I think that's a massive thing, and especially today, you know, the mental health and the positivity of people, that needs to come together. And cold water therapy is 100% the easiest thing, and possibly it's free nature, you know, you can do it anytime you want, so it's unbelievable. Yeah,
definitely, because we're cavemen, we live in luxury, heated seats and heated house and jacuzzis, and when you get into cold water, it's like a switch flips, you go, wow, and then the buzz after it. I've been getting tired actually after it, doing it the last couple of weeks, but it's the feeling after it kind of balances everything out, the health benefits from it, mentally, physically. Do you think it changes your body shape a bit?
I don't, but one of our friends, he was my best man at a wedding, Big Lewis, he kind of suffered a wee bit of, well, drinking and whatever else, you know, a bit of addiction stuff. So on the 27th of December, so Tom and I have been doing it for a couple of years now, but on the 27th of December, I said to him, right, let's get together, go out in the sea. He's like, right, yeah, buzzing, right, no worries. So we get out and I'll get to the body changing shape, sorry. But he's like, right, we got there and we went out and we're chanting in the sea, we're, ooh, all this. And it wasn't like, we didn't think about it, just what came naturally to us, you know. And since then, we've done it every day since. And Lewis has actually lost, he sent me a message, down 125, I think he's lost about 9 kilos. And I think that is a lot to do with the cold water as well. You know, he hasn't necessarily changed an awful lot. He's gone a bit more walking and stuff. But in 4 weeks, he lost 8 kilos and he did cold water every day. I'm not saying cold water will make you lose all this weight, but I think it does something to you. I don't know the science behind it.
Yeah, I think it's medical. It's proven that you can lose weight from it. And it's all to do mentally, because in life, when we hit an obstacle, we just want to turn away and run. But if you actually just breathe, adapt to it, you realise that, wait a minute, because people have survived 100% of their worst days. People are a lot stronger than what they think. And when you get into cold water, the first thing you want to do is run. Exactly. You want to get your towel around you, so get the heating on in the car. But if you actually just breathe, adapt, you understand, wait a minute, man, you become stronger to things. So when you do hit obstacles in life, you realise, it's actually fuck all. I can sit in icy baths for 5-10 minutes. Yeah. I ain't going to worry about what somebody's saying online or whatever pressure you've got in life. So you handle it better. But for me, obviously, we spoke about Wim Hof and stuff earlier, and he changed the game. Obviously, the breathing techniques and ice exposure has been here for hundreds of thousands of years. Obviously, people are putting their own spin to it. I know a lot of boys in Glasgow and girls who are doing, who are battling with addictions, who do the cold water stuff. I think there's a 30-day challenge there from people that were doing it every day. And the amazing feeling after it is second to none. What about Eddie Hall? How much has he played a massive part in your success?
he's. I look to successful people. So Eddie's the most. Him and Brian Shaw probably, but certainly UK, Eddie's the most successful strongman. So if you're looking for a blueprint, Eddie Hall's that. You know, Eddie Hall, he's. I was saying to you earlier on, you know, we went down to see Eddie last year and we're driving around looking for his house and we parked at this big mansion, phoned him, right, mate, we're outside some big house, it's, don't know if it's yours or not. He's looking out the window, hi, it's mine. And it was just like the biggest house in the estate, man, it was stunning. And but Eddie's given us that kind of, that path to kind of follow. You know, obviously we're taking our own path, our own journey, but he's kind of paved that way. He's that kind of, that, the first person, you know, to kind of be that new age successful strongman in the UK. And he's, you talk about changing the game, Eddie's changed the game massively, man. He's just such a smart, switched on guy, you know, and his self-belief and his realization of him, of what he wanted to do, you know, we've talked a bit about, you know, life and death basically, and Eddie was that. He was like willing to risk everything to be the world's strongest man. And then he's like, right, that's me, done that. And now he's switched to acting, he's on TV, he's YouTube, he's
boxing.
Doing boxing, yeah. he's nailing it, man. Everything he does, yeah. Just.
And that's the thing, it's that even though you're pushing yourself to the limits, you know there's rewards at the other side of that pain. You know there's rewards at the other side of that misery, yeah, and man, sacrifice. Definitely. And if he's had any opportunities to do it, I'd imagine Two Strong Brothers acting yet. Has that came yet? No opportunities yet?
There's been a few things kind of coming through, but personally, I want us to finish strong, man. This, you know, if we went away and did other stuff, it would be kind of unfinished business, yeah, with strong, man. So
you came too far.
Yeah, we're on that cusp, and certainly Tom, you know,
so acting takes a lot of energy and time as well. You know, I've seen it like half four when he did a lot of his acting, his strong man suffered. You know, and that's what I don't want. That, and
yeah.
I mean, I think doing our own documentary, and maybe people seeing that will then be like, oh, these guys are good, you know. So
because then you've got film opportunities, it's more sponsors. How do you deal with the business side of things? Is that difficult? Or do you?
Tom doesn't. it's just so like the career I had before. I was more in engineering, you know. So I wasn't prepared for anything, you know. So we've now got our own merchandise company, YouTube, gym, meal prep. So all these kind of things that are coming, it's all very new, so it's quite challenging to, you know, we're reading contracts and we're like, oh, we can't sign that because it's full exclusivity, we can't have that. And like going back to the guys without, I don't like to get into like kind of heated debate, and I don't like that, you know,
drama.
I feel like anxious and stuff, you know, when you've got to kind of phone someone and say, look, I don't think we can sign this, or I don't want to do this.
It feels as if you're letting them down.
Yeah, and I get all anxiety and stuff. I don't like it, but then I'm like, well, I have to do it because that's part of business now, isn't it? It's like we've got to have these awkward conversations, and you should realise that it is just business. You're not offending anyone. You know, it's like if someone didn't want to buy any of our merchandise, it's not a direct attack on us. It's just, that's what it is.
Where can people buy your merchandise so we can give it a plug?
Oh, yeah, stoltonbrothers.com.
Send me the link, I can put it in the description. Awesome. Was it cool. T-shirts, hats?
T-shirts, hats, hoodies, socks. We're doing tracksuits soon. Hoodie.
You know that'll go through the roof if somebody brings home a world title, innit?
Oh,
isn't
well,
it?
He's got a fucking
it's gone through the roof right now.
Is it?
It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's
funny, yeah.
Why do you think it's so popular, strongmen? What, it's a massive event worldwide that is watched globally.
Yeah, I think in the UK, though, it's like the working class kind of, you know, it's attainable. I think people see it as like, well, like Eddie Hall, he was like a truck mechanic. You know, you don't have to be this, I don't know, you don't have to be this kind of elitist looking athlete. You know, you get guys with big beer guts going in, giving it a go, and, you know, it's all different shapes and sizes, and it's more catered to the bigger gentleman, should we say.
Yeah.
So it's maybe more attainable, and people, I think, with that working class ethic, whatever, or mentality, background, you know, really seem to buy into that and kind of it's mental, the fans, they're so supportive. Like, it's just...
It seems like a good day out.
Oh, it's brilliant. Oh, yeah.
Put it in Strongest Man's probably the best day out you'll
is
get.
That's class. Well, we've actually got a show in Glasgow coming up in October, so...
Where's that?
It's in the SEC.
I'll come along, man. Yeah, cool, we'll get to see you. Yeah.
it's, but people get so amped up, man. Mm-hmm. It's like you hear people screaming for you, and it's just incredible. Mm-hmm. I almost ripped my t-shirt off and threw it to the crowd. And, just showboating, but there was an old man. He had it. I think he was in a wheelchair, and this woman went to grab it off him. She must have been pissed up. But I think he was like, must have been about 60 odd. Mm-hmm. And this wife, he kind of grabbed it and she ripped it in half. And like, it was like, Jesus, violent sometimes, like some of the people. But it's, I don't know why people like it. It's just, maybe people can just appreciate
it. It's entertaining as well. Yeah. I mean, I think people appreciate what we put our body through. Mm-hmm. It's like watching guys lift cars, you're like, that's cool, you know. So I think it's
cool trucks and aeroplanes. Yeah. It is mad though what the body can do.
How do you deal with injuries?
Yeah,
touch wood, I've actually not had anything. Yeah. So it's but I think it will mentally, I think, play on you. I mean, I've had a few niggles and stuff, but for me, I kind of just fight through it. You know, if you tear your quad, you can still train your upper body stuff. You know, you just have to be smart about it. But I think nowadays there's a lot of physios and a lot of help you can get with the injuries, but
more prevention, isn't it?
You've not had any.
No, it's more injury prevention. I think that's what we look to do. So that's, like, we've got our physios that we see kind of two times a week.
Is there a lot of stretching or anything?
No, I'm not going to stretch. No, I don't. Nah. No. Like, I did a bit of yoga, a couple of classes, and the yoga instructor said for us what we do, if we become too loose, it's actually
easier to make injury.
It's detrimental to our training. So, like, we stretch in the sense that, like, say, if we're squatting, we'll kind of warm up our legs and kind of do a bit of kind of mobility work there, but not when you see other athletes stretch. It's not as a necessity, I wouldn't say, in strongman.
Yeah, it must be hard for athletes, though, to be doing the strongman, planned all year for it, working hard, and then maybe get an injury the first event. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's one of the worst
ones. Who's got psychologists at the side or anything?
The injuries, that's the worst one. Seen
Giants Live, there was a guy called Phil Roberts on the Atlas Stones. He, missed the platform. It came back and snapped his leg in half, and I was like, I can't do Atlas Stones. And he had a big cage over his leg and was out. But that was like, you see it on the, you see it in like Facebook and Instagrams and stuff, but then to see it in real life, you're like, nah, this is like,
horrible. You can hear it. So say when you tear like a pec or a bicep,
you hear it crack.
Like, it's like Velcro.
It's like it went the wrong way. So it was,
and that's tough. You know, when you see it, like, maybe we should see sports psychiatrist and stuff and have a chat about it. Cause it does play in your mind, but I think, I don't know, for me, like, if I'm training, I got to train everything in my body. So all my small muscle groups need to be strong, my big muscle groups need to be strong. And in my head, as long as I know I've done that, again, we said injury prevention, that prevents injuries. So I think a lot of guys come in and they get strong really quickly. They don't maybe, they kind of forget about the smaller muscle groups, assisted muscle groups, and they don't train them as much, and that's when the bigger muscles, your quads, your pecs, your whatever else, will tear because the supporting muscle groups aren't as strong.
So there's a lot of science behind it as well. It's not just a case of lifting heavy weights. There's so much more to it than people think.
Very much, certainly nowadays, back when, like, Big Jeff and, you know, Jean-Paul and all that, you know, they were competing, it was more of like a gung-ho kind of just get stuck in, and there wasn't as much research, or the recovery wasn't there, the science behind it wasn't there. I mean, we have nutritionists, we have physios, chiropractors, acupuncture, hot and cold, you know, everything's geared towards being the best athlete we can.
How is it between that, like, strong men and like Mr. Universes? Is there a competition, is there respect there, or how do they treat you? Because like Arnie and that and all that kind of, how, like, the,
I think the Arnie elite loves it. Arnie's a huge fan.
Yeah, he loves it.
so we haven't actually met Arnold yet, but we're doing a Arnold competition. So an expo, Arnold's expo in In the UK sometime this year, so he's going to come over. So hopefully we'll get the crack with him then.
That'd be class.
But he loves it. He loves the strength, because I think he just, when he was coming up through his bodybuilding career, you know, obviously bench pressing, whatever, deadlifting, you know, he's got an appreciation of it. Mm-hmm. But with like a lot of the kind of Mr. Universe of bodybuilding, you know, it's so kind of it's so alien, you know. There was quite a funny photo with Brian Shaw, Eddie Hall, and Jay Cutler. Mm-hmm. And Jay Cutler looks, honestly, it's
tiny.
Jay's a big boy, like, uh-huh. But like when you've got a 400-pound, couple of 400-pound mm-hmm. monsters to next to you, mm-hmm. you just
it's totally night and day, totally different. Yeah, yeah. But I didn't know if there was rivalry between it and or.
Not really. No,
people reach out. Bodybuilders reach out to like. Me on like socials and stuff, and you see a lot more kind of fitness models and bodybuilders adding some strongman compounds into it because it's a bit of fun, you know. So
well, CrossFit's next level.
Yeah, CrossFit.
If you want your mindset good, yeah, man, go and do CrossFit. Do you know what I mean? They ain't fucking about in there. Yeah, it's not that.
Brutal, man.
I can go to the gym and I just pose up, walk about. Yeah. Don't do fuck all. But when I'm in CrossFit, well, you're a different animal. Your ego's left at the door.
Yeah,
become totally vulnerable to whatever's going on, and everybody just works their asses off.
Class, man.
Do you know what I mean? So going forward for the future, lads, what's your plans? First of all, will you look?
Yeah, so just push on. Podium at World's Strongest Man. That's my goal, certainly this year. And I'm kind of changing now. I'm wanting to keep competing in Strongman and winning the shows and stuff, but grow the business. You know, that's what's getting me excited now, is seeing the business grow and kind of do more with the mental health. I'm an ambassador up in the Highlands, Mikey's Line. It's a charity for mental health, so I'm wanting to do more. Keep promoting like cold water, the benefits of it, cold water immersion therapy, and get people just realizing that, you know, you can battle it, you can be okay. You know, we talk a lot about it's okay to not be okay, and I do understand that, but in the same time, it's not. You know, we need to do more to make people okay. You know, it's my responsibility to make sure people are okay. You know, it's not just a tagline that we say. It's taking the time to kind of speak to people and kind of, I really want to do more with that, because it kills me, man. It's some of the stories you hear, man, it's like, just, it really gets me. So I just want to help more with that, grow the business, win World's Strongest Man, be a Hollywood movie star, and yeah, apart from that.
But you know what, you're on course for it. You're on course for it. And like that tagline, it's okay not to be okay, I'm the same. It's true, but you don't need to fucking live there.
Yeah.
Don't just sit there for 5 years and 10 years because people use that slogan.
Definitely, man.
Get off your ass, get out of fresh air, no matter what weight you are, what height you are, get out, get some fresh air, get some nature, switch off your phone, connect, and you will gradually start feeling better. What about yourself, Tom?
Yeah, so, well, obviously strong, but I want to be a positive role model for everyone with autism. I mean, for me, that's, since I started the sport and started gradually getting better, I've always wanted that. I mean, the amount of messages I get from like younger kids and their mums saying like, you're changing people's lives just for lifting weights and being on YouTube, and like getting people to like, I mean, I've had kids that wouldn't talk to now talking and like opening up to people, which is, you know, from just lifting weights and expressing myself on YouTube, you're like, geez, that's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So for me, that means more than anything than winning like titles. But obviously winning World's Strongest Man, is a massive goal as well. And then growing the business with Luke, you know, it's, I want like us to kind of take over the UK, take over the world, and win worlds 5 or 6 times, but also just get our name and our brand like to the top of the sport and make everybody know that like we're the Stoltmans, and you know, we're here to take over.
Fucking stay in love, yeah.
But yeah, that's just, you know, that's big goals and they're going to get smashed. But yeah, I'm starting to look in the business stuff as well. You know, obviously, you can't do strongman for the rest of my life, and I don't want to do it till I'm 40. I want to like be done with this sport quick. I want to win worlds and then go on a different path, you know, maybe get into the art scene and just traveling the world. You know, I love traveling the world. I love all that kind of lifestyle. So I just want to do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
I think it's phenomenal, guys, for what he's achieving. He's a very nice guy. He's probably two of the nicest guys I've ever met. For what he's going to achieve, somebody will bring the world title home this year, I believe. and 100%. I'll have you back on with the throw. I don't want to fucking get knocked out, mate, so I'll just let you find that out in a day. For what you are doing, for pushing forward, Tom, it's unbelievable. Your mum will be proud. Amazing effort for the trophies that you've won, for what you're doing for mental health. It's fucking unbelievable. You should be proud, lads. And for coming on today and telling your story, I genuinely appreciate it. God bless for the future.
Cheers.
You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter, JamesEnglish0, Instagram, JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.